Hey everybody, Paul Boyer here. So the Bitcoin Foundation basically says to Ben Lawsky, hey, your BitLicense proposal doesn't have a purpose section. That's what I said on the last episode. BitLicense has no purpose. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 10 of the Mad Money Machine.
Broadcasting from the Bitcoin bunker, 6 blocks below, brandishing the blockchain to fight good versus evil. This is Bitcoin versus the man. This is the battle of the century. This is the Mad Money Machine.
The Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by listeners like you. Go to madmoneymachine.com and click the donate button. And by Brawker.com. Brawker.com. Before you buy it, Brawker it. Well, before I begin the show, I want to talk about the LTB Network's magic word. Last week, we did kind of a scavenger hunt to get the magic word. This week, we're going to do a compound word. I'm going to give you one or more words throughout the show that you append them together with no spaces to create the sum total magic word that you go to letstalkbitcoin.com, enter in, and claim your share, your big share of LTB coin. So the first part of this week's word is bit, B-I-T. Listen throughout the show to pick up one or more words to add to B-I-T to construct your magic word. Yeah, last week we talked about the BitLicense proposal and regulations from Ben Lawsky and had a clip from him on CNBC and kind of talked about all his grand plans for licensing Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Well, since that time, the Bitcoin Foundation has sent a letter to Ben Lawsky, basically requesting an extension of time. And let me pull it up and read a little bit of it for you. Here it says, Bitcoin Foundation, August 5th, Dear Superintendent Lawsky, we're pleased to offer this preliminary procedural comment. Blop-de-blop-de-blah. They say below, we suggest not only that you extend the comment period by more than a nominal period, but also consider conducting hearings on the proposal and adopting an iterative process in which you issue drafts, take comment, and reissue drafts until all issues are fully vetted. Fat chance he's going to do that. This thing was written long ago. He knows what he wants. He wants to put the screws to Bitcoin. It's not him that's writing it. It's his banking buddies writing it. They basically want to eliminate Bitcoin from the threat of competition. Either that, or they want to overtake Bitcoin and be the only ones that can possibly be granted a license for operating in the Bitcoin space. Bitcoin Foundation goes on to say, you've already received a letter signed by over 400 individual Bitcoin enthusiasts, Bitcoin industry executives, members of the Bitcoin Foundation's leadership, and Bitcoin venture investors, all asking for an extension of the comment period. And they talk about how you, Ben Lawsky, took a year putting this thing together, and now you want 45 days for comments. And they say, we are not versed in New York financial services law or regulation. It takes time to gather the meanings of legal terms of art and compare them with emerging technologies, processes, and business models. But then they go in to say, as you know, New York's State Administrative Procedure Act, or SAPA, requires a statement of, quote, needs and benefits, unquote, to accompany proposed regulations. Such a statement must set forth, colon, and this is a quote, the purpose of, yes, the purpose of, necessity for, and benefits derived from the rule, a citation for and summary, not to exceed 500 words, of each scientific or statistical study, report, or analysis that served as the basis for the rule, an explanation of how it was used to determine the necessity for and benefits derived from the rule, and the name of the person that produced each study, report, or analysis. New York SAP Law subsection 202-A, subsection 2, subsection B. And they talk about how the Statement of Needs and Benefits published in the proposed regulations SAPA notice asserts the existence of needs and benefits, but it does not articulate what they are, except in gross summary. And they post the paragraph. Quoting it, they say, extensive research and analysis by the Department of Financial Services, the department, including a two-day hearing period in January 2014, has made clear the need for a new and comprehensive set of regulations that address the novel aspects and risks of virtual currency. Existing laws and regulations do not cover proposed or current virtual currency business activity. The proposed regulation is therefore necessary to ensure that A, out of ABC, A, persons or entities engaged in virtual currency businesses, business activity operate in a safe and sound manner. B, New York consumers and other residents are protected from the risks posed by virtual currency business activity. And C, persons or entities engaged in new virtual currency business activity have a framework within which they can grow. Still doesn't sound like purpose to me, certainly not needs and benefits. And so here's where the Bitcoin Foundation really gets to them. They ask for a freedom of information law. They want to get from the Department of Financial Services what novel aspects of digital currency your research and analysis identified. What risks exist in digital currencies that don't exist with other currencies? They want the research and analysis referred to in the Statement of Needs and Benefits as soon as possible and well before the close of the first round of comments. And I think this is exactly right. There was no purpose stated in the regulations. There was no real Statement of Needs and Benefits, and there was no examination of what risks this set of proposed regulations is trying to mitigate. But then a little while later, the Bitcoin Foundation did release a press release statement saying that the Bitcoin Foundation filing with New York Department of Financial Services wins promise of more information about BitLicense proposal. They say the NYDFS quickly promised to provide the foundation more information about its controversial BitLicense portfolio. Press release says that the NYDFS promised hours later to deliver that information to the foundation within 20 days. So that would be by August 25th, if you mark your calendar. And they further say in the press release that the Bitcoin Foundation will publish all of the material it receives from the DFS for the Bitcoin community to review. And they finally say that the NYDFS has signaled that it will extend the comment period on its sweeping controversial draft digital currency regulation. What if every state did this? 50 states, all with their own crazy set of regulations that the Bitcoin community had to adhere to. What is some business that's growing in England to do to serve anyone in the United States? New York must think they're so arrogant to be the first ones to regulate Bitcoin. They suppose they'll be the model. They'll just be copied and pasted into all 49 other states' law or regulations. I've got to believe it's either ignorance or arrogance that compels them forward on this silly BitLicense regulation scheme. Ignorance or arrogance. And I don't like either one. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine's Bitcoin Tool Crib. Well, this week's tool, I'm actually not sure if it's a recommendation or not. I guess just like the tool from a couple weeks ago. This tool just came out a couple days ago, and it's a new kind of wallet. It's called Rush Wallet from the makers of CryptoKit. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go try it. Maybe try it with a very small amount of millibits. And see what you think about it. And let me know, is this secure or not? Would you feel safe putting a good amount of Bitcoins in this thing? Or is this really for small? Is this like a coin purse Bitcoin wallet? RushWallet.com. The way it works, it's using a lot of JavaScript. You go out to the website first. You move your mouse around to generate some entropy and generate those Bitcoin addresses and private keys and so forth. And once that's done, your private key is actually encoded in the URL in your address bar. You see it up there in the address bar of your browser. Now it's located after the hashtag, which they tell me that information after the hashtag does not get sent to the server. So the deal is, after you create your Bitcoin keys in your wallet using JavaScript on the client side, you then bookmark that in using your browser. That keeps your private key in your browser's bookmark area. So I'm not sure what I think about this. How secure are bookmarks after all? And do you feel safe putting a lot of Bitcoins under the security of your bookmark tool? It's clever. It's easy. It's RushWallet.com. And like the best things in life, it's free. Now, you've heard me say, before you buy it, broker it. What exactly do I mean by that? What I mean is you need to get into the habit of, before you buy something on the internet, think of going to broker.com first to use your Bitcoins to buy it. You could go to eBay and buy things, but go to broker.com first. You could buy something from Amazon, but go to broker.com first. You could buy something from the iTunes store, but go to broker.com first. Why? Because you can use your Bitcoins to buy it, and because you can set the discount that you want on your purchase. Oh, and the next word in this show's compound magic word is license. L-I-C-E-N-S-E. You got 4 days to enter the magic compound word, remember. So how does Broker work? The way it works, you go to broker.com, you create a free account. You load your account up with some Bitcoins. Then you click the Spend Bitcoins tab and indicate the URL on the internet in which you want to buy something. You set your discount percentage. Your order shows up in the Buy Bitcoins tab for someone who wants to buy Bitcoins using their credit card or PayPal. They will purchase the item you requested and happily pay the premium for the ability to get your Bitcoins. They'll have the item they purchased for you sent to you, and once you receive it, you send them the Bitcoins. Everybody wins. They get the Bitcoins, you get the discount and the item. Go to broker.com and see for yourself. Before you buy it, broker it. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of Bitcoin gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give a little background on their Bitcoin philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Madman Machine Season 2, Episode 10 is... oh, once again, Ed Moy. Edmund Moy, who actually was a guru on a previous episode of the Madman Machine, not sure which exactly one right now, and I don't feel like looking it up, is a former director of the United States Mint and well-known economist. I'm reading an article from Cointelegraph, which is a pretty good website for Bitcoin news. And pretty in-depth articles. This one by Carlo Calaruzzi. This one by Carlo Caralazzo from August 5th. Entitled, "The Banking System is Mostly Not Needed." 38th Director of the U.S. Mint, Edmund Moy. The article says Mr. Moy has a background in both small businesses, working in his parents' restaurant as a youth, and along with being the director of the Mint, he served as special assistant to President George W. Bush and served on the transition for the new Department of Homeland Security. Mr. Moy also became interested in Bitcoin early in its development and continues to study the new paradigm by diving in himself. He is scheduled to keynote at the Cryptolina Bitcoin Expo on August 16th. That's the North Carolina Bitcoin Expo. And they asked him, how did you first become acquainted with cryptocurrencies? He said, I first became aware of cryptocurrencies when I was director of the United States Mint. There was a footnote in my coin demand forecasting report mentioning Satoshi Nakamoto's paper, and in a later report, another footnote about the release of the open source software. During my tenure from 2006 to 2011, there wasn't much cryptocurrency activity and certainly not enough to impact coin demand. They ask, you recently purchased bitcoins. What has been your experience so far? He said, it was easy peasy. The exchanges I used were very user-friendly and self-explanatory for anyone who has bought products or services online. They ask, what problems do you see that are inherent in our current centralized economic system? He said, once sovereign governments stopped having their currencies backed by gold and began down the path of fiat currency, they've discovered how easy it is to create more currency with little restraint or accountability. The problem has been exacerbated by the 2008 global financial crisis when most countries opted for monetary stimulus instead of austerity. Accommodative monetary policy almost always leads to lowering the value of currency. The second problem is that sovereign nations are not just economic entities, but also political ones. So while currency is mainly used for economic transactions, countries manipulate their currencies to help support their political goals. China is a prime example. They artificially keep the yuan low to make their exports more competitive. That's because one of their goals is to become the world's largest economy, which is part of their broader goal of pushing the United States off its pedestal of being the world's only superpower. They ask, do you think virtual currencies like Bitcoin can help alleviate or even solve some of these problems? And if so, how? He said, because cryptocurrencies are decentralized, the market determines its value, not government fiat or sovereign nations' political agenda. Because businesses use it for transactions, it seems to me much more authentic and rational way to determine value. And because only 21 million bitcoins can be mined, that makes inflation, or devaluing, mostly out of the question. They ask, what future do you see for Bitcoin in the world economy framework? He said, sovereign nations are not going to give up their monopolies on a currency without a fight. There is too much institutional momentum and infrastructure built to support the current system. That will make it difficult to change overnight, let alone evolve over many years. However, developing countries could adopt Bitcoin much more quickly. For example, many African countries have leapfrogged over landlines to directly to smartphones. Add that to the high cost of manufacturing currencies due to lack of economies of scale, and I think you have the right environment to have broad-scale adoption of Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. One big advantage that cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin have globally is that it is a protocol in addition to being a currency. For example, because Bitcoin transactions are peer-to-peer, the banking system is mostly not needed, and nor are there hefty transaction costs. P2P also transmits payments much faster, and because Bitcoin is decentralized, there are no exchange rates and accompanying expensive foreign exchange transaction fees. That means less friction in international trade. Skipping down through the article, they ask, can it become a real alternative for fiat money? He says, yes, but an alternative is different than a substitution. I believe that the notion of cryptocurrencies is revolutionary, but currency and payment systems are pretty much evolutionary. When the two clash, the likely outcome is somewhere in between. For example, the transition from a gold standard to a fiat currency took 45 years, and yet there is still a role for gold in the modern economy as bullion. Also, I grew up using cash, writing a lot of checks, and sending money orders, but now use credit cards, wire transfers, and electronic banking. And I've just bought my first Bitcoin and have spent some. All these payment systems and forms of currency exist in the market because users derive some value in them that they can't get anywhere else. But the proportion of market share will change and some will eventually fall out of favor. My point is that if history is any indication, people use whatever payment system and form of currency is most convenient for each transaction. There will always be a role for notes and coins, though that will likely diminish over time. And there will be a role for cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, which will inevitably increase over time. And skipping a little bit down further in the article, here's a timely question. What are your thoughts of the BitLicense and virtual regulation in general? He says, I know the Bitcoin community has strong opinions about this topic. Let me say that, as a former federal regulator, I'm disappointed that this was the best product New York State could come up with after a year of information gathering. For those who care about working within the regulatory environment, they need to comment on these proposed regulations to even have a chance at modifying them. More broadly, if the Bitcoin community wants to influence the regulatory environment, then much more education of Congress and their staffs and regulatory agency staffs needs to take place. And some other industries have a better regulatory environment because they do a better job of self-regulating. I know that is tougher to do in a decentralized environment that cryptocurrencies exist in. There also needs to be a greater understanding that the federal government is not monolithic with its regulatory authority. Instead, it is dispersed to a loose federation of agencies that don't necessarily coordinate and sometimes compete with each other. Lastly, if federal regulators move too slowly, then you will see more states stepping up. That results in a patchwork environment different in all 50 states, much like how health insurance is regulated. And their last question, would you recommend people invest their money in cryptocurrencies? He says, Bitcoin is many things, including being an investment. I would personally treat it as a speculative investment and only invest if you're willing to take a loss. While I think Bitcoin has tremendous upside, I would not make that the centerpiece of my portfolio. So depending on your investment goals, age, and appetite for risk, a Bitcoin investment is something to consider. Well, this is a fine article from Cointelegraph. They have a couple of sections from with expert commentary from Rick Willard and Will Pangman that follow the article. I'll have a link to it in the show notes and you can read it for yourself. Wise words from our guru this week. Congratulations, Ed Moy. Well, today marks the 10th anniversary of something very special. The very first episode of the Harry Brown Money Talk radio show. Now, Harry Brown was a libertarian candidate for president, but he was also a radio show host. Actually, he had a political radio show starting in about March of 2002. Now, he passed away in 2006, but if he were still alive, I'm sure he'd be talking about current events of today. For example, the porous borders. And what would he have to say? It would be very interesting to see what Harry Brown would have to say about America's porous southern border, or the Israeli Hamas conflict. Which side would he come down upon there? Or the Ebola outbreak? And what are we doing to stay safe and avoid spreading the dreaded virus? And he was also an investor, and he had wise words about how to invest your money. So he started a radio show on this date in 2004. I thought I'd play a little excerpt from that very first show. This is the big band theme song he used to start every show. It's a called Come Home, Come Back, Sweet Papa from Bob Crosby. Big band era tune. It began every Money Talk episode.
All right, go ahead. Well, hello and good afternoon. This is Harry Brown, and I'm so glad to be with you. This is the debut day, the premiere of a brand new money show.
August 8th, 2004.
We will be here every Sunday afternoon at this time for 1 hour, and we will be talking about your money and how to save it, how to keep it, how to make sure you don't lose it. And you're invited to join the show if you want. If you have questions, call 1-800-259-9231.
It's kind of funny. Anyone else recognize who uses that phone number these days?
Well, you know, investment programs are legion on radio and television. investment sites are proliferating all over the internet. Go to any bookstore and you can read and see and pick out from dozens and dozens of different investment books. There are more newsletters than there probably are Chinese in the world. The fact of the matter is that talking about investments is a wonderful pastime. People talk about moving indicators. They talk about special indicators that tell you when the market is going to turn. They tell you about inevitable events that have to happen. But you know, it's 37 years, I hate to tell you that, but it's 37 years since I first entered the investment world. And I have to tell you that all of that talk is just that, talk. People love to talk about investments, talk about what the economy is going to do, when gold is going to take off, what the stock market is going to do, is it in a bull or bear market? But the fact of the matter is that it's just talk. If you could go back to just 1 month ago and watch an investment television show in which they talk about the market and listen to what the people say, you would realize that everything that they said was of no value to you whatsoever.
And that's really the genesis of the Madman Machine show, is I would track some of the predictions of the investors, especially Jim Cramer.
If you just kept the newsletters that you subscribe to and every once in a while read a newsletter from a year ago, you'd be shocked at how little is found out in that newsletter about where the market was going.
Isn't that really the truth? I mean, we hang on every word of these newsletters that are predicting the future, but then we go to that same newsletter after the deadline of the event has occurred and realize this is just a bunch of rubbish.
Now, I'm not saying this to put other people down and tell you that I know what the future brings. No. I'm doing this to tell you that we live in an uncertain world. We are not electrons or molecules which are the same from one to another and the same from one day to the next. We are human beings, and human beings think. They may not always think correctly, but they think and they make decisions and they react to events around them and they change their minds. And the point is that because we live in an uncertain world, there is no way we can gather the information necessary to know what the market is going to do in the future.
I actually used the phrase at one time, the future is uncertain, invest accordingly.
The answer lies not in finding the fortune teller with a perfect record. The answer lies in being able to deal with a world of uncertainty the same way we do in our business and personal lives, in which we seem to get along just fine. But the interesting thing about the investment world is that a man, for instance, who has made $20 million by building a business from scratch, by having an extraordinarily good grasp of how the world works, will walk into the investment world and throw away everything that he knows about how the world works, everything he knows about people, and suddenly think that he's in some parallel universe where all those rules that made him a success in business no longer apply. That now somehow there are special configurations that he can divine on a chart, and that will tell him where the future is going to be. Or that he can find a fortune teller who's got an extraordinary record of predicting turns in the market. Well, what I'd like to do today for our inaugural broadcast is to give to you what I call the 16 golden rules of financial safety. They are the rules that I have followed successfully and which I have helped others follow successfully.
Well, that's all I'm going to play of that inaugural episode 10 years ago today of Harry Brown's first Money Talk radio show. Now, if you are interested in those 16 rules, you can still get his book called Fail Safe Investing by Harry Brown, and Brown has an E on the end of it. And as it turns out, I think many of his radio shows are timeless. Their investing principles are the kind that don't depend on any particular event in the market. They're just timeless principles of investing It seems to me like they could be played over and over again. Maybe somebody should do that. Now, one thing that Harry Brown said in there that was very interesting, he talked about a businessman who develops this knowledge of his business and really, you know, understands how to apply the principles of his business to make it successful. But then when it comes to investing, he throws that all out the window and tries to go with some fortune teller. Well, that story is very similar to what Mark Hebner at Index Funds Advisors, IFA.com, says about his own personal life. He was a successful entrepreneur and, you know, made some money in his business and then went to invest it, only to find out that the guys that were investing it really didn't know what they were doing. He started his own company helping people invest in index funds. And then he developed the 12-step program for active investors. We've already been through 8 steps. Let's do step 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 9, history. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. I suppose every investor has to go through this process. One late night, I was reading a book about investing. The quiet was deep. Then I realized, as I closed my eyes, that I could find hope in my history. And now I've traveled too far to change my mind. I've unraveled the mystery. At first, I didn't know quite what it was until I did my time. Only a good understanding of the long-term historical risk and return of various indexes will enable investors to know how to allocate their investments in accordance with their personal risk capacity. Over the 78-year period the data is available, small value has outperformed the S&P 500 and large-cap growth funds. It's interesting to note that over the 48-year period, emerging market public equities outperformed venture capital and at a lower risk level. Gold and silver are also interesting, reinforcing the idea that they have lots of risk and returns pretty close to T-bills and bonds. In addition to the long-term risk and returns of indexes, the third input used to create optimal portfolios is cross-correlation. Cross-correlation refers to the extent to which performances of different asset classes move in relation to each other. The lower the correlation among different indexes in a portfolio, the greater the diversification, which means lower volatility of returns. If you're confused about the expected returns on your investments, if you don't know your history, we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home. Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me. Well, you can smell the incense. Let's go find out what flavor it is in Satoshi's Corner.
Satoshi no Corner.
Well, we've been tracking the postings of Satoshi Nakamoto. We read his white paper, Bitcoin, and we've been going through some of the early BitcoinTalk.org forum postings from Satoshi. This one's from January 27th, 2010. A member out there with the handle RIX, made a posting out there. Said, lately when I've been trying to send coins, the following pops up twice, then the application terminates. Exception runtime error, send money, accept transaction failed. When I restart bitcoin.exe, the transaction is showing as 0/unconfirmed. The status do not change even when the total block count increases. I'm running 2 instances of Bitcoin on my home LAN, one on my desktop computer and one on a virtual machine on my laptop. And so he says the error occurs when I send to my own Bitcoin address, to my other computer's Bitcoin address, and to another Bitcoin address not currently active anywhere. I'm not sending by IP. And here's the key sentence. He says, I've been moving wallet files and index files back and forth. Could this have something to do with this? And Satoshi replies on January 27th, 2010, that is what happens if you copy wallet files around. If you copy your wallet file to a second computer, then they both think the money is in the wallet is theirs. If one spends any of it, the other doesn't know those coins are already spent and would try to spend them again, and that's the error you would hit. Now that it's clear that this is a key error message, it ought to be something more like, the money appears to be already spent. This could happen if you used a copy of your wallet file on another computer. You can move or back up your wallet file, but it needs to have only one lineage and only used once in one place at a time. Anytime you transfer money out of it, then you must no longer use any previous copies. And this brings up a good point, he says. In the case of restoring a backup file that may be from before you spent some coins, we need to add functionality to resync it to discover which coins have already been spent. This would not be hard to do, it just hasn't been implemented yet. I'll add it to the list. This would make it mostly repair the situation instead of giving that error message. And RIX replies, yes, I thought it had something to do with that. It would be nice if there was a wallet tool for merging wallet files instead of removing unused Bitcoin addresses and, as you say, resyncing. What about resyncing in the future when the Merkle tree is pruned? And Satoshi replies, January 28, 2010. The resync idea would go through your wallet and check it against the block index to find any transactions that your current computer doesn't realize are already spent. That could happen if they were spent on another computer with a copy of the wallet file, or you had to restore the wallet to a backup from before they were spent. Currently, the software just assumes it always knows whether its transactions are spent because it marks them spent in wallet.dat when it spends them. A wallet merge tool is possible to implement, but much less in demand once resync solves most of the problem. With resync, you could do about the same thing by sending all the money from one wallet to the other. The receiver would resync and discover all its overlapping coins were spent, then receive them in the new transaction. And then, just a few days later, on February 3rd, 2010, Satoshi makes this additional post. I uploaded this fixed to the SVN. It watches for spent coins and updates your wallet on load and also continuously as blocks come in. I also put a better error message, but it should never hit it because it always finds spent coins ahead of time, unless you spent the same money at the same time on two computers at once. If you want to try it, PM or email me your email address where I can send it as an attachment, and also what OS, Win, Linux 32-bit or Linux 64-bit. Well, there he is, continuously improving Bitcoin. There he is. Satoshi Nakamoto. The next word in our compound magic word is stinks. S-T-I-N-K-S. Stinks.
You're listening to Paul Boyer's Mad Money Machine.
Did you listen to Let's Talk Bitcoin episode 133, where Stephanie Murphy, for the entire show basically, interviewed Richard Bowes, who went on a charity-oriented trip to Kenya to try to evangelize Bitcoin basically? And what he described was, I guess, hard for him to say. Sounded very truthful, though, and that was his experience was difficult. As you can imagine, it was very difficult to get the people in Africa up and running with Bitcoin. I mean, I can think of people here in the United States where it's difficult to get them up and running with Bitcoin, and we've got a very fast internet with, very fast smartphones. And the folks over there, he didn't mention it, but sometimes they have trouble getting electricity. They don't necessarily have smartphones. He was outfitting some of them with tablets, only to find that some of the tablets would break. Or that the once they acquired the tablet, it was a whole lot more beneficial for them to sell the tablet and get the money that the tablet afforded them for food and to support their daily lives. Really informative episode about the state of Bitcoin. Bitcoin hasn't had its user interface moment quite yet. Well, I still haven't figured out what to do with my LTB coin. You know, I'm supposed to be using these tokens to acquire other things, to trade for other things. The thing that I'm most interested in doing is improving the Mad Money Machine show. And I don't know what to do, what to spend it on to improve the show. So if you have any suggestions about how to improve the Mad Money Machine using LTB coins, let me know. Well, I mentioned earlier in the Guru Roulette segment how much I like Cointelegraph.com as a site for Bitcoin news. Let's go out and check, see what else is in the news. Yelp's director of public policy donates $10,000 in Bitcoin toward Bitcoin education. Michael Wendrowski, Rublon, says Bitcoin will make the internet much more secure and robust. Multi-sig wallets will become an industry standard, he says. Bitcoin professional trading site Kraken increases fees. Robocoin's next ATM scans your entire hand, but it does a lot more than that. And what is Ethereum going to do with all the money it raised? Zappo addresses credit cards fees, promises to reimburse users. And Cointelegraph tells the WHO, the World Health Organization, use Bitcoin to beat the Ebola virus. And Dogecoin adopts merged mining with Litecoin. All very interesting stories. Go to Cointelegraph.com and read up. The North American Bitcoin Car giveaway is going to be entering its second leg in August, starting August 10th in Albany, New York. Then in August 11th, New York, New York. Coming down to Philadelphia, the 12th and 13th in Baltimore. Then heading all the way down August 15th and 16th to Raleigh in that Cryptolina Expo I mentioned. August 18th, we'll be heading over to Nashville. August 20th, St. Louis. 22nd in Kansas City and then in Tulsa that same day. Then September begins the third leg. You can go to bitpages.co/content/car.html for more information about the North American Bitcoin Car Giveaway Tour 2014. Win the Bitcoin Car. Here's something we haven't done in a while, and that's talk about the state of the market cap of the various altcoins. Let's just kind of run down through the top 10. Number one, let's do it backwards. No, there's no suspense in going backwards. We know what number one is. It's Bitcoin. It's $7.7 billion. Number two, of course, Litecoin, $220 million. Then third is Ripple, $45 million. In fourth place, NXT, $41 million, nipping at the heels of Ripple. Number five, Darkcoin, $27 million. Number six, Peercoin, $22 million. Number seven, BitShares X, $17.9 million, almost $18 million. Number eight, coming at $15 million, is Dogecoin. And following quickly behind it, $14.5 million, is Namecoin. And rounding out the top ten, MadeSafeCoin, $11.5 million.
Call the Mad Money Machine voicemail line at 571-366-7121.
Well, were you able to collect up all the various magic word pieces? I'm not going to tell you how many there were, but you got to listen to the whole show to collect them all up. You got 4 days, remember, to collect them all up, concatenate them together with no spaces, and enter them into letstalkbitcoin.com at the magic words section of the website. Well, last night I had the not rare privilege, but the recurring privilege of seeing The Fix perform live. I first saw them when I worked at Magic Mountain Theme Park in California back in 1983 on their Reach the Beach tour. And it was a great privilege to see them. I've since seen them here in Northern Virginia several times. First time was at an outdoor venue when there was only about, 300 people in attendance at this big outdoor venue. It was one of the first concerts the charity had put on. I'm sure the Fix was kind of disappointed in the turnout. Maybe they weren't paid by the ticket. Maybe they were just paid a flat rate. And I got to see them at the State Theater down in Fairfax a few years back. And I got to see them last night in the Tally Ho Theater here in Leesburg. It's a 1930s movie theater converted into a performing stage. A great little venue to see concerts. I've always wanted the Fix to show up, and they finally did. I made the decision to go see the concert instead of the preseason Redskins versus Patriots game. Well, here's one of the songs they played. They played it by my request, as it turns out. And they mentioned me by name on stage as they thanked me for requesting it because they wanted to play it. It's Shaman. This is from YouTube where they performed it live on KFOG Radio.
The morning is pure, bathed in bliss, a quivering wish, a glance to the sky, painted anything but blue. You can never be sure how much love you receive. Just keep pumping it out. You can open a door, find a life expansive. Hey Shaman, I'm sure that the road unwinds given time. If not, what's it all for? What's it all for? In an innocent eye, recoils and doubt from a troubled life. Feel so unsure, self-hate becomes automatic. All the troubles in store feel like the weight of the world, and only you can break free. Smash the mold and realize it. Hey Shaman, I'm sure that the road unwinds given time. If not, what's it all for? For what's it all for? Sometimes you gotta step forth. Your soldier of light, your armor is low. Oh, you gotta step forth. You know you played a part in but did you put your heart in? Shaman, I'm sure that the road unwinds given time. If not, what's it all for? For what's it all for? Sometimes you gotta step forth. She's soldier of light, your armor is low. Hey, you gotta step forth. Shaman, I'm sure.
You can learn more about The Fix at thefix.com. That's Fix with two X's. Well, I will see you again in 2 weeks. That is, what, Friday, August the 22nd, it looks like. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money. It takes Bitcoin to make a Mad Money machine. And in the meantime, buy some Bitcoin, spend some Bitcoin, donate some Bitcoin, then replenish your Bitcoin. And go to Brocker.com. Before you buy it, broker it. And remember, I'm looking for ideas to help improve the show. You can also tweet them at Mad Money Machine. My website's madmoneymachine.com. That's where you can donate. Email me, bitcoin@madmoneymachine.com, or call the voicemail line, 571-366-7121. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
This is Harry Brown. I hope you'll be back next week.